Telk English B2 C1 University. Mock Examination 1. Listening Part 1. You will hear two conversations. For each conversation, there are three tasks. Decide if the two statements are true or false, and decide which answer fits best, A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation once. Mark your answers for items 1 to 6 on the answer sheet. First, you will have 30 seconds to read the items. Number 1, 2, and 3.
Jerry, I'd like to talk to you. Do you have a minute?
Yes, of course.
Jerry, your general knowledge is excellent, and your performance over the last 2 years has been consistently high. So I was wondering what your future plans are.
I'm thinking of applying to some universities to study history. But I haven't yet decided which.
Well, I'd like to suggest that you consider some of the Ivy League universities.
But they only take the brightest and best students. Do you really think I'd have a chance?
Absolutely. I've discussed your case with the other staff, and we'd all like to encourage you to consider this option.
I see. I know that degrees from Harvard or Yale have a really good reputation and would give me an edge over other applicants when I'm looking for my first job.
Yes. And I think you'd enjoy the intellectual challenge and the unique environment there. Apart from the excellent teaching staff and resources, you would benefit from the facilities of a large international university.
If I consider this option, what steps do I need to take?
Applying to American universities is a lengthy process, so start collecting information well in advance. To apply for an undergraduate program, you must submit your application directly to the individual university, rather than a centralized body, such as the Universities and Colleges Admissions Service in Britain.
What about application deadlines?
Most universities admit new students twice a year, but each institution has its own application deadlines and procedures. I'm sure you can easily find more information on the internet.
Okay.
Oh, and don't forget to research financial aid opportunities. Ivy League schools are expensive. Even if you don't necessarily need financial aid, you can still get some money knocked off tuition through a variety of scholarships.
That's good to know. I'll do some internet research and compare the details. Thanks for your encouragement, Ms. Powell.
Number 4, 5, and 6.
Damien, wait!
Hey, Carmen. How was last night?
It was great. We went to the new nightclub. Why didn't you come? It would have been much more fun if you'd been there.
Well, to be honest, I can't afford things like that right now. I'm a bit low on cash at the moment.
Oh, sorry to hear that. But I thought you had a student maintenance grant.
I do get a small amount, but my parents are supposed to pay the rest, and they can't. They've got other financial obligations at the moment.
Oh, I had no idea.
Neither did I, until I spoke to my parents last week.
Have you thought about getting a part-time job?
Well, my original plan was to concentrate on my studies, but it looks like I have no choice now. Any ideas?
Maybe. You could get a job in a restaurant or a coffee shop. Hey, no, wait. You're bilingual. Why not make use of your Spanish? You know, you could teach or do some translations or something.
Do you really think there's much demand for Spanish?
Sure. What about all the students who need help with Spanish? And you know, there's that big Spanish department here. And one of the Spanish professors is a good family friend. He might have some ideas too.
Do you think so?
Absolutely. Get your CV together and I'll forward it to him.
Okay, that sounds like a plan.
End of listening, part one. Listening, part two. You will hear a podcast of a lecture. First, you will have 2 minutes to read the items. Then you will hear the lecture. You will hear the podcast once. During the podcast, decide which answer fits best, A, B, or C. For item 14, you're asked to choose the option that best summarizes the speaker's attitude. Mark your answers for items 7 to 14 on the answer sheet. Now read the items.
Welcome to the fourth in our series of Where Are They Now talks, which follows the success stories of our former students. Tonight we welcome Jeff Santiago, whose book Sprouts to Savings has spent 5 weeks on the bestseller list. Since graduating 7 years ago, Jeff has been involved in the field of sustainable agriculture. Today, Jeff will talk about growing your own food, even in student accommodation, and how it helps the environment, your health, and your wallet. So please welcome Jeff Santiago.
Thank you. It's great to be back here. My love of gardening goes back to my grandmother. She planted a garden every spring, and I always helped her put down seeds, pull weeds, and dig up potatoes in autumn. It was fascinating as a kid to see how one little seed could provide food for the whole family. Grandma always wondered why anyone would buy canned peas when garden fresh ones tasted so much better. For her, it was about saving money and at the same time, eating well. Years later, when I was a student here, before I'd written Sprouts to Savings, I helped a local primary school develop a garden program. The kids were excited to take home the aubergines and courgettes they'd grown, but they didn't understand how good these things could taste. They didn't know anything about garden produce. These kids spent a lot of time alone while their parents were at work, so when it came to food, nutrition gave way to convenience. Instead of fresh vegetables they'd grown themselves, kids were eating ready-made meals full of salt, sugar, and artificial additives. It was disheartening. I decided to reintroduce people to fresh food. Working with the school district and local grocers, I created a farm-to-table program where kids grew organic vegetables and learned the science behind it. We also brought in botanists, biologists, and even beekeepers to discuss water quality and environmental issues. Then, each week, we took kids into the kitchen to make simple dishes using fresh ingredients. We sent them home with recipes for their parents. The goal was to make the link between what grows out of the ground and what ends up on the plate more visible. The point I first made was, when you cook with fresh vegetables, especially if you can grow your own, you really maximize every pound. Consider that one tomato plant costs 3 or 4 pounds, and you might get 8 kilograms of tomatoes from that one plant. All that for hardly any effort. And it certainly offers more nutritional value than 3 or 4 pounds spent on processed cafeteria food or a fast food meal. Anybody can offset their supermarket costs by planting a small garden or putting a few seeds in pots, even if you live in student halls or shared flats. This is especially true for herbs. Fresh coriander, basil, or dill can be expensive, but you can grow your own organic herbs in a small pot and enjoy flavour at a fraction of the price. The British Gardening Association says a food garden provides an estimated £500 annual return when you consider the investment versus the price of buying produce at the market. Next slide, please. When I started writing Sprouts to Savings, I wanted to teach people about that economic impact. But I quickly learned that gardening yields other benefits too. By eating healthier, you will feel healthier. You'll be getting more nutrients. And replacing processed foods with fresh fruits and vegetables helps you lose weight as well. This leaves you less likely to suffer from obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. Research says slimming down by just 5 to 10% makes a difference. The key advantage is reducing your medical expenses. You might not be thinking of that now when you're in your teens and 20s, but establishing healthy habits in your youth will serve you well in 20 or 30 years. Also impressive is the environmental impact. One carrot might travel 1,800 miles to get to your table. Think about that. How much fuel does that require? What carbon footprint does that one carrot have? Then add in the resources used in creating packaging for that carrot, packaging that you'll just throw away. It's pretty wasteful. By growing your own carrots, you eliminate many environmental stresses. Plus, you save money by not having to drive to the shop. We know that fruits and vegetables start losing nutritional value as soon as they are harvested too. So the farther something travels to get to your plate, the fewer vitamins and nutrients you ultimately receive. So, all of this should encourage us to make the effort to grow our own vegetables. As it turns out, more and more people are doing this. Going back to some of the British Gardening Association figures, we've seen a 19% increase in households planning their own vegetable gardens this year versus last year. That's 2 million new families growing their own basics. Tomatoes are popular, so are peppers and beans. Lettuce and onions are high on the list too. These are simple, nutritious foods that can be used in all sorts of home-cooked dishes. Okay, so we understand why we should garden. But how do you start if you have no background and don't know how to keep plants alive? The advice I give to new gardeners, and especially student ones, is this. Start small. You can grow herbs and vegetables on a balcony or a windowsill wide enough to hold a few pots. The best bet for beginners is to stick to something simple, such as lettuce. Look for leafy mixes or baby greens rather than heads of lettuce, and make sure to plant them in the shade. The leaves only take a few weeks to grow, and after you cut them to eat, they'll grow back a few more times. Herbs are also an excellent choice, especially if you grow them in the kitchen window, because you can snip what you need as you cook. Try chives, rosemary, or oregano, which add lots of flavour to your dishes. If you've got a sunny window, get a hanging tomato planter. If you're short on light, try growing mushrooms. Some varieties even thrive in dark spaces. There really are options for any situation. Gardeners with more space can try bigger planter boxes or even greenhouses. These are especially handy for protecting plants in harsh weather conditions. They also keep plants safe from pests such as snails, slugs, and beetles. Slugs, for example, will eat your leafy crops. Greenhouses can be easily bought ready-made from any do-it-yourself store. Or you can make one yourself from old wood, plastic sheets, and with some basic tools. Then get yourself some seeds, or better yet, give your garden a jump start by planting seedlings that are already a few weeks old. From there, all the traditional growing rules apply. Gardening really is easy if you just give it a try, and it's important. I'd like to wrap this up by sharing one more story from that school garden project I mentioned earlier. After the first year of the project, one of our 10-year-old participants told me that her favourite lessons included learning how photosynthesis works, growing her own popcorn, and helping to build a compost pile. She and other students made marinara, and they tried vegetables like broccoli and Brussels sprouts that they'd grown themselves. And remember, this girl was only 10 years old. She shared all that information she learned with her family. After one of our sessions, her father came to me and said, "You know, Jeff, these classes are really making a difference for all of us. I'm much more conscious of the types of food I'm preparing. When you see how excited these kids are getting about vegetables and gardens and healthy habits, you really start to pay attention yourself." His comments really motivated me to continue my work. Whether you're trying to be a good example for friends and family, or you simply want to save some money while eating better, gardening is a great way to make it happen. Thank you for joining me today, and good luck with your own gardens.
And thank you, Jeff. We're so happy you could share a few stories.
End of listening, part 2. Listening, part 3. You will hear a talk show with people giving their opinions on a topic. Which statement, A to K, best matches the opinions 15 to 19? Mark your answers for items 15 to 19 on the answer sheet. You will now have 1 minute to read statements A to K. You will then hear the talk show once.
And it's the Friday evening Josh McKellen show. Our phone-in topic today is of special interest to young people. Gap years, that wonderful time of freedom between school and university, or even between university and job. Recently, voices have been heard advising against taking time off, stating that the golden age of the gap year is coming to an end. What do you think?
Number 15.
Well, I had no choice. I had to earn some money and save for tuition fees before I could even think of higher education. So I opted to take a job for a year and try out my chosen sector. Actually, this was a really valuable experience. I found I'd been pursuing the wrong thing and that my original idea didn't suit me at all. Instead, I discovered a whole range of career options that I didn't even know existed. And I landed a really well-paid position. But I was never once tempted to stay stuck in my job because I knew that in the long run, it was in my best interest to get a good degree.
Number 16.
My advice to young people is, take a break, but use the time wisely. Getting a place at university or finding your first job is becoming increasingly competitive, and one way to make yourself stand out from the crowd is to have a productively spent gap year on your CV. Not to mention the personal enjoyment and experiences that will stick with you for the rest of your life. It's a unique opportunity to see the world and really live life. But it needs to be planned. Not all gap years are of the same value. So don't waste your time hanging around at home.
Number 17.
I definitely think the benefits of a gap year overseas far outweigh the risks. I didn't feel ready to go straight from school to university, so I got a place at Princeton, but then requested to delay my studies to do a year of voluntary work. My time in Thailand was a life-altering experience and gave me a new understanding of myself. I developed skills that you don't learn when sitting at a desk studying, and I have a new appreciation of other cultures. Now, I feel much more focused and motivated and know where I'm going.
Number 18.
We discouraged our son from taking time off. We feared he would lose his study skills and his results would suffer. It's a known fact that you need self-discipline to gain the academic success necessary for a top job. Or worse still, he might even have decided against going on to university. Additionally, we pointed out to him that he'd lose 12 months and start earning real money a year later than his friends. Anyway, where was the money going to come from? We're willing to help pay for university, but not for a gap year as well.
Number 19.
My university admissions officer recommended a gap year because she said that I would then be better prepared and be better able to cope with academic life. Apparently, there's a high dropout rate, about 30% of students don't manage to complete their degree. Generally, universities consider gap year students to be more mature and more likely to finish their studies. So I'm thinking of doing some volunteer work in my local community.
The lines are open for another hour, so please keep those calls coming. But let's take a break first and listen to this week's number one on the charts.
End of listening, part three. Listening, part four. You will hear a podcast of a discussion between several speakers. First, you will have 1 minute to read the items. Then you will hear the discussion. You will hear the podcast once. During the podcast, decide if the statements are true or false. Mark your answers for items 20 to 25 on the answer sheet. Now read the items.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Professor Thomas Curtis, and I'd like to welcome you to our monthly panel discussion for first-year students. Our topic is plagiarism. And on the panel, we have Melanie White from the University's Office of Academic Appeals and Regulations, and two students, Carrie, who's from California and doing her postgraduate course on Shakespeare here, and John, who is a second-year chemistry student. The Oxford Online Dictionary defines plagiarism as the practice of taking someone else's work or ideas and passing them off as one's own. This university does not tolerate plagiarism and requires every student to act with integrity. Melanie, can you summarize how the university combats plagiarism?
Well, we require students to give a signed statement of compliance with any work that is submitted for assessment certifying that the work is their own. When marking student assignments, our academic staff is advised to use web search engines, and we have similarity detecting software which allows them to cross-reference students' work with all previously published material and with the assignments handed in by former students. If plagiarism is suspected, it has to be reported to the nominated academic in the faculty who is personally responsible for dealing with the allegation within a short time frame. The student is asked to attend a hearing and can bring along a support person or a student representative. If a student is found guilty, depending on the extent of plagiarism, he might be asked to submit new work or be given a fail grade, or the graduation date may be postponed. In the worst case, he can be suspended from the university. In all cases, a written warning is issued and a copy of this is put into the student's file.
Let me clarify here that there is a difference between negligent plagiarism and dishonest plagiarism. Negligent plagiarism is often unintentional. It is when a student carelessly presents someone else's work as their own without acknowledging the source. In other words, fails to follow recognized referencing practices. Dishonest plagiarism is a graver offence. It is when a student knowingly presents someone else's work as their own, or even engages another person to do the work for them. Here I'd like to mention that not only the student who uses plagiarism for his academic advantage, but also the student who knowingly assists in plagiarism will be found equally guilty of academic dishonesty and will have to face the consequences. John, I believe you have offered to share your experience with our audience?
Yes, I was charged with plagiarism for an assignment in my first year. I'd worked through the night to get my essay finished on time, and absent-mindedly cut and pasted one passage from the internet without acknowledging the source. When I got the letter charging me with plagiarism, I didn't take it seriously and chucked it in the bin, and so I lost valuable time to defuse the situation. If I'd spoken to my professor and clarified the situation, I wouldn't have had to attend an official hearing. As it was, I got off lightly and only had to rewrite the assignment. But you bet I double-check all my quotes before I hand anything in now.
I'd like to add that the university takes a sympathetic approach towards students who are involved in cases of plagiarism, but who did not have the intent to deceive. If they've made a mistake, they shouldn't be permanently seen as black sheep. Once the plagiarism has been dealt with, students are given a second chance. Above all, the university does its utmost to ensure that students are fully aware of how to avoid plagiarism. Every student is given guidelines and examples specific to their subject when they get their study outlines. Students can also attend workshops, use the Academic Honesty module on the library website, and consult tutors for guidance.
John, you have a comment?
Yes. We students often have difficulties distinguishing between paraphrasing and quoting and plagiarism, especially when confronted with challenging and unfamiliar study areas. Citing electronic sources is an additional problem because website addresses can change overnight, or the URL may be too long. So I'd like to encourage you first-year students to attend the special classes on referencing that the university provides at the beginning of your studies. They're really helpful.
When we talk about plagiarism, we're not just talking about misuse of the internet. One of my students turned in an essay that was identical to an assignment submitted by a different student in another group 6 months earlier. I noticed the plagiarism because the essay did not quite answer the question that had been posed, and several sentences were not typical of this student's style. I see our postgraduate panel member Carrie has something to say here. Yes, Carrie, please go ahead.
I do see that this was incorrect behavior, as each student is supposed to hand in his or her own original work. However, where is the borderline between learning together and doing your own work? Many students find study groups help them achieve better academic performance, and that has certainly been my experience. I'd like to point out that worldwide, group work is not viewed uniformly. Different cultures have different perspectives on plagiarism. In some cultures, sharing notes and answers, even in exams, is common practice for both professors and students, and accepted as a way of improving the results of the class as a whole. And, for instance, referencing has a different definition in India. My fellow Indian student queries why you need to reference something you have learned. He argues that after he has read many books and puts his ideas down on paper, he doesn't know exactly which book he got which idea from. At my last university, plagiarism was presented as such a big offense, it created a really negative atmosphere. In some faculties, nobody was willing to share any ideas with each other. Everybody just worked on their own.
I agree. This whole topic can be a huge cultural stumbling block to international students. I know that there are cultures where it's normal to memorize exactly what has been taught in the classroom. To be successful, you have to be able to repeat what has been taught word for word in tests and in assignments that you hand in. Copying your teacher's words is a way of showing your admiration for them, and it's not easy to change a way of learning. This goes deeper than observing regulations. It's about how you see the world. Melanie.
I think we need to consider why students who come from Western cultures plagiarize. Of course, there are some students who are just lazy and want to get their degree with as little effort as possible, but what about the rest of the students?
As a postgraduate, I can look back and say that with experience, completing university assignments becomes easier. Many undergraduate students, especially freshmen, lack research skills. They just do not know how to effectively use reference sources. Or they have difficulties coping with everything. Juggling the demands of various classes, keeping deadlines, striving to get good grades, and having an active social life. And although they feel extremely anxious about their assignments and desperately need help, they don't have the courage to ask their professor for additional clarification. This, in turn, leads them to start working on their paper too late, and then they come under such time pressure that they have to find a way to cut corners.
I'd like to thank everybody for their comments. We know that young people find the move from school to university intellectually challenging. But students who look to the university staff for assistance will get all the guidance they need. To my students, I can only say, make your own significant contribution and have the confidence to use your own voice.
This is the end of the listening subtest. Thank you for listening.